There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to DDNS Labs Games. My name is Patrick Beja, and we're going to be talking about video games with Scott Johnson. How's it going, Scott?
Hey, I feel like we haven't talked in a while. It's good to be here. Excited to talk about said games, and hopefully people will come away going, oh, man, there's things in here I didn't know.
Hopefully. Or
better yet, there'll be games they want to play, I guess.
That I think we can convince a couple of people of playing some of the games we're going to be talking about. It's been a couple of months since we did the last episode, so let's remind people what we do. It's an addition to the DTNS stable of shows, specifically in the labs, experimental shows, and we try to cover the gaming industry in a very... I don't want to say casual, but we're expecting the DTNS audience to be less interested in the very detailed nitty-gritty of the way we might talk about games in our respective game-specific shows. So here we give you an overview of what's important to know if you're following the gaming industry a little bit from afar with, let's say, a meddling interest, but not if you're not specifically a hardcore gamer, you will still get the info you need. So that's the way we approach this here show. We're going to be talking about God of War, which is kind of impossible to avoid. We can't not talk about it. Double negative. That works, right? It means we have to talk about
it. Totally does. Yeah, absolutely.
Nintendo Labo a little bit, Red Dead Redemption 2, and a bunch of other things. And let's start with actually God of War, which we just got the news today that it is the fastest selling PlayStation 4 exclusive game ever. It has outshone a number of other games, and it's not surprising because it came out to a fanfare of reviews and high scores, and it is kind of already a game that is being discussed for Game of the Year and possibly Game of the Generation. Every generation, there's a game that kind of defines it. I think it's a little bit early to have these kinds of talks, especially with this one. We'll have to wait and see how it plays out over the year and how we remember it after a few months and the frenzy has passed. But certainly, it is a game like you rarely see in this industry in that it got universal acclaim. I think the least acclaimy thing I've seen about it is people saying it's quote-unquote just excellent. It's, you know, it's not the best game in the world. It's only a fantastic game, and that's it. And that's high praise. I finished it. And we're not going to spoil anything, obviously, but you've been playing it as well. What do you think about this? Is it does it earn its high praise?
It absolutely does. This is a franchise that was on the wane a little bit. People were sort of great with early versions of this game. 1 and 2 were amazing for their time, and 3 was certainly a nice achievement on the PS3. But I think people were, outside of its portable modes and seeing Kratos show up in other people's games and things here and there, I think they were hankering for something new, or at the very least, a break from Kratos and his destruction of all the gods. I think we'd been through that enough. And I don't think anybody was really thinking about how good or great this would be. Now, E3 presentations for the last couple of years have been very strong. It made a lot of people go, oh, this is not the same as the previous versions of this game. There's something more going on here. So lots of really good buzz from that. But I think the game actually had to get into reviewers' hands, have that embargo lift, and have that praise flow out for these sales numbers to be what they are. Because, like I say, otherwise this was a character and a world and a game series that was not necessarily on anybody's like hot must-have radar anymore.
Well, it was certainly
ever. You know,
yeah. I mean, it's still a high pedigree for the game. It was one of the main titles and series for the PlayStation 2 and PlayStation 3 eras. But as you said, what this game has done incredibly well is renew the core of the game and take it out of that. I always say it was kind of adolescent. It was a lot of angry Kratos killing lots of things in a very violent manner, and then laying with women in that I'm 14 and I'm seeing naked ladies on the PlayStation. It's kind of racy and it's actually kind of appalling when you look at it from here now. But it's completely got out of that mold, kept what was making God of War, the core of the game, and wrapped it into something a lot more modern, both in storytelling and in game design. And it's usually what I say about it is that it does nothing incredibly innovative, like you might reference Breath of the Wild or Dark Souls as games that have elements of them that are groundbreaking for the industry from a design standpoint. This one doesn't quite do any of that, even though the weapon that it creates, the Leviathan Axe, is probably one of the best feeling weapons in any game ever.
In the history of video game weapons, it's up there in my top three. There's no question.
Absolutely. But this game does everything perfectly and just a little bit better. You know, there are lots of games that do something incredibly well, but then fall short significantly in other ways. This one, I don't think, you know, it's not perfect, obviously, but it has, I don't think it falls short significantly in any way. It just does everything so well that everything, it's very hard to find something to fault it with. And that's really rare.
Yeah, it's an execution thing that's perfect here. It's not, they didn't invent a new way to play. They didn't invent new mechanics that completely upend what we think about gaming or anything like that. Plenty of games do that, and they should be commended for that. But this game took familiar elements that have worked for a while in a lot of different ways, whether it be narrative or mechanical, whatever, but put them in a package and executed on that package in such a way that it feels like one of the more polished, finished, smartest, well-paced experiences I've ever had. And I'm not done yet. I had to leave town and I've missed all my gameplay time. I'm about to get back to it. But even being however many, 4 or 5 hours I am into the thing, it's already, I mean, if there's a game of the year vote right now, this is it.
Yeah.
This is the game. This is it for me.
It's certainly in the running. I'm 30 or 40 hours in and I'm still playing. I've seen the credits maybe, I don't know, 5-10 hours of gameplay ago, and I'm still playing. There's stuff to do. The pacing you're talking about is absolutely on point. It's never too much, it's never too little in everything it does. So it finds that perfect balance in everything, in storytelling, in battles, in exploration, in puzzles. It's on point in everything. So it's certainly a game that is worth looking at, even if you're not a big gamer. If you do enjoy a game here and there, this one should be on your list for potential buys for the year. I'm absolutely without a doubt.
And it's a reason. It's actually a reason to own a PlayStation console. I think so. I think it's one of those games that if you've never, you know, gone for it, or you're a PC exclusive kind of person or something, this is a great reason to do it. And you're not going to see this on other platforms, at least not in the foreseeable future. So I would absolutely play this thing if you consider yourself a gamer who enjoys really strong storytelling and great character stuff, and technically having that all meshed together in a way that just feels like, I don't know, it feels like just like the most pro product I've played in so long. It's fantastic. It's really, really good. People should play it. By way of comparison, the previous record holder was Uncharted 4, A Thief's End, which sold, that was back in May of 2016. That sold 2.7 million units worldwide. And Horizon Zero Dawn was the biggest debut in the history of Guerrilla Games, with 2.6 million copies sold during its free two weeks. But this God of War game, from a venerable series and one of the coolest characters ever. I mean, I don't care who you are. That's that was true before this game. Now they've really taken him to a place that I am completely sold on. So I guess well done, Sony. And the Santa Monica studio just killed this. I love everything about it. Cannot wait to see what they do with it next, either via DLC or more games down the road. It's amazing.
Yeah. 3.1 million is the number for this one. That is up from the previous sequel that was, as you said, Uncharted 4. Horizon is on the list as well because it's the first debut, the first original, the biggest original launch.
Right, original which is a launch, big thing. I wonder what the biggest exclusive of all time is. Was it like Halo 3?
You mean on any game? On any console?
Any console in the last, let's say, 10 years. I wonder what that is. I'd be very curious, and I don't think we have that number, but I wonder where this compares to some of that. But anyway, it's the hell of a thing. Great, great journey, incredible game.
Nintendo Labo has also come out since we last spoke, and I'm not going to get it, but we did get a feeling of basically how it was being reviewed, how people talked about it, and I think it's safe to say that it's not lighting the world on fire. It's certainly enjoyable, and some people are definitely enjoying it, especially with their children. If you don't remember, Nintendo Labo is that cardboard construction set that you use the console, the Nintendo Switch with, and make different toys with. And you have very interesting interactions between the toys, the cardboard toys, and the console. And it's a fun experience, but I think some people were predicting that it might be what takes Nintendo to a place that the Wii took them with motion gaming a few years ago. I think it's safe to say at this point that it's not going to be that. It's just a fun addition to the Switch lineup for those who want to have that experience.
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, when Labo launched and everybody was getting their stuff, their pre-orders and stuff, one of my first thoughts was, what do all my gaming buddies think about this? And I assumed in my head that this is not a Patrick project, the thing that he would want.
my son is a little bit too young. He's three and a half months old. So yeah. It's not yet. But I think if he was a bit older, maybe I would have.
Yeah, if he was 5, maybe 6 years old, you'd be in heaven right now because there'd be this dad son project that was actually fun. And you'd find a way to make that work. But
as opposed to all the dad-son projects we have currently that are not so fun, which involve a lot of excrement, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, a lot of poop building. I get it. But in my estimation, this thing is popular enough to have a good enough sales for them to consider continuing to do it. But it's also kind of a weird sale. It's a hard sale. It's a hard thing to describe. It's hard to let people kind of know. If you're sort of already in the maker mindset, then you probably gravitate toward this easily. If you're not, then this may seem just like weird. Like what? It's cardboard and there's a game component? Like how does this work? Like I think it's a weird thing. I am so glad they're doing it. I don't have any interest to spend 4 hours and build that robot with the strings on it and all that, which is the average of what takes people to finish that thing. I know others like the piano and other stuff take less. It's not for me at this stage of my life at all, but I am so glad they make a thing like this. I think this is a great use of that hardware, and I don't want them not to do it, but I'm not their audience, I don't think.
I think it's a fairly good way of describing it. It's not for me, but I'm glad it exists, and yeah. And I would echo that sentiment.
They seem to have given a lot of thought and care to it, and that's maybe what matters most, so I say well done to them, and hopefully the sales numbers reflect it and it did well for them because it is a risky, weird freaking thing. So I hope it worked out.
The other thing we wanted to talk about is the one game that scares everyone this year. It's Red Dead Redemption 2, which just released its third trailer, which we're going to talk about in just a second. But I did want to mention that it really, as well, as I said, it does scare everyone. It's going to be released, what is it? I'm October not sure anymore.
28th or something. It's like right before Halloween, and as you know, right before BlizzCon. So that kind of sucks. But yes, very end of October.
And the thing is, every publisher is trying to put out their big games before. Yeah, it's October the 26th. And you have a slew of games coming out in September. Things like Dragon Quest XI, Spider-Man, Tomb Raider. They're all before Red Dead Redemption 2. That's understandable. But so I was a little bit worried after I saw the second trailer for Red Dead Redemption 2. I'm curious what you thought of this one.
Okay. So I'm all in all the time. It was my game of the generation, last generation of consoles.
For those who don't know, sorry, I'm just going to cut in for a second. It's basically Cowboy the Game. It is a Rockstar Studio game, so it's very open world. Well, usually they are. It's the people who do GTA. So this is Grand Theft Auto in the West, more or less.
1800s Old West, cowboys, horses, bank robberies, all that business is kind of what the point is. And I'm a huge Western fan. I love Western movies. I love Westerns, novels. I like all that kind of stuff. I love the Old West as a thing. I think it's America's only mythology. You guys have all kinds of rad mythology in Europe and other places that go back thousands of years. We don't, but we have the Old West that we have completely mythologized, and I love it. So, needless to say, I'm very excited about this, and the only reason I'm hesitant to say God of War is my game of the year is because I haven't played this yet, because I have a feeling this may be a real close contender, if not the winner. But I don't really know. I have a lot of faith in Rockstar. They make nothing but great games as far as I'm concerned. Even if they aren't your cup of tea, there's rarely any question about, how well they do or, the popularity or any of that. They've proven themselves. And Red Dead 1 was amazing. Red Dead 2 looks really good, visually nice, all the upgrades you'd expect for this current generation of graphics hardware. Really would like a PC version. I think this one will get that. I think they've made too much money on GTA and GTA Online with PCs to ignore that. That's an audience that they'll definitely tap into. They just aren't going to right out of the gate. But anyway, all that being said, I'd be afraid of it too if I were these other companies. Like, that is a genuine, now I'm in the Old West. It's a genuine blockbuster, and that thing is going to just tear everybody a new hole if they try to release around it. It's a bit like having a Star Wars movie or a Marvel movie open when you're trying to get your fun little indie film out. So I don't blame all of that. In terms of the trailer, I'm as excited as I am and as pro Red Dead as I am, this may surprise some. I think it's all just bits of story and some storytelling and character faces and things like this. So it's not really a complete look at what the entire game is going to be, but it does feel a little bit like a GTA 5 mod at this point. And by that, I just mean the surface level stuff, not talking gameplay, not talking how big that world is or how invested I'm going to be. But just these cutscenes, it may as well be Trevor trying to get meth out of, that part of California and get it over into San Andreas. And, there's just kind of that sense to me, that feeling. And it's probably because it is Rockstar and it is a game that the same people who made GTA and GTA 5 are making. So it's not that weird to feel this way. But that was my general impression. There's nothing about this third trailer that really pushed things too much further for me. I mean, I'm already 100% in, so there's not much they could have done, but...
That's interesting because I felt so. What I thought was a little bit lacking in the previous ones we've seen was the dramatic nature of the storytelling, which I didn't really get through to me. And in this one, it did. It really did. It felt like the story had weight. And we don't know anything about specifically about the story, but the moments, the scenes, the dialogue, it landed on me a lot better than it did before. So it kind of, because those games, there are many ways to play them, but one of the ways is to really follow the story and play it like a narrative adventure and maybe do a little bit of the open world stuff here and there, but not necessarily focus on it too much. And that's how I enjoy playing them, because I mostly like narrative games most of the time. And this one, this trailer seemed to indicate that I would be getting something that I could sink my teeth into. So I'm a little bit less, not that, you're never worried about a Rockstar game, but I'm less concerned that maybe it's not going to be for me. Now I'm back in, kind of. So
for me, it's just that they can't do anything with a trailer that will dissuade me from getting it.
Right.
it's just that there was nothing here that I didn't already expect them to be able to be good at. You know what right. I mean? Like,
so there was nothing that made you want it more than you already want it hugely a lot.
Yeah, which is already at the maximum. The right. meter shows I'm at full red. So it's I'm at full red dead. Sorry, that's the color. But I'm very excited about it, and I cannot freaking wait. And I don't like to be dragged along and teased so often. But this date will hold. There's a lot of people out there going, man, we'll see. They skipped the last one. Man. No, they gave general windows and then moved those windows. They didn't have exact dates yet. This is the first.
It's coming out. It's coming out this October. That's
we're getting it. There's no question in my mind that we're getting it in October. So everyone, I think, just needs to calm down and knock it off. The best games are the ones they sometimes go back in the oven for a bit for a little extra cooking. Yeah. I have no problem with that.
Maybe they're going to push it a week or two or something like that, but it's coming, you know, before the end of the year, absolutely, and 99% chance it's coming out in October. It's already been pushed a year, so
yeah, year and some months maybe. Because it was originally...
No, I think it was last year that it was supposed to come out. But
something like that.
It was pushed twice, at least.
They're one of those companies that it just doesn't matter. They'll release it, and it will print money. And, and we'll all play it, and it's going to be great. And I feel like they're making it for me, so I'm pretty jazzed.
Oh, that's so sweet of them. Yeah. Sony just announced that they are adding PlayStation 2 games to their PlayStation Now service. That's really interesting. The PlayStation Now service is the one that lets you play games streaming, meaning you get the streaming video and you only need basically a controller and a PC or a PlayStation, obviously. PlayStation 4. Mainly, but it means you can access their entire library of games for $15 a month if you take the 3 months plan. And there are 600 games available. The PlayStation 2 games they just added are not the most incredible ones. I'm guessing they're testing it right now, but it's getting to be a pretty interesting service, I think. Let's not have the discussion again about whether or not the streaming side of it, the technical side of it, can work, because it highly depends on your internet connection. But now you're getting games from three generations of PlayStation. I'm guessing they're going to add PlayStation 1 games at some point as well. It seems like a universal library of PlayStation. It's a pretty cool service, especially if you can play on PC as well, which you can.
Yeah, for me, it is down to that technology. I wish I had other options, like download it and play it sort of stuff. And I realize why they don't. There's a breadth of weird hardware over the Sony years that you just, you know, if you're going to replicate that, you got to put hardware in PlayStation 4s that does that specifically. It's not just simple emulation anymore. So I understand why they do it this way. And if that technology works and is seamless, then it's no problem. And one day this is, you know, this is going to be just no big deal. It'll just be the way you play games, probably. I don't know. But I think I still kind of prefer, and this is someone who doesn't own an Xbox One, I like their backwards compatibility plan a little better. If you own it, you play it. And they keep introducing new ones. They seem to be dedicated to making sure that happens. They've introduced original Xbox games as well as 360 games and all the downloadables, things you already own, things you didn't own you can get. And then their all-you-can-eat plan, kind of Netflix-style plan for first-party titles, is super compelling. So,
even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
This is the one area where I feel like Microsoft has really got some good ideas on how to best compete with Sony's online offerings. And so if I end up with an Xbox One X this year, which is possible right around Red Dead time, then we'll see, because those services are a little bit more compelling to me. And really, in this particular case, if Sony was saying, "We'll just play whatever, here's the service, it's a subscription," I think I would go for it if it wasn't for the fact that this is all streamed and I can't count on internet.
Well, I think you might want to try it. You know, they have a 7 days free trial on the PlayStation 1 service. I think you might want to try it before you knock it, because I suspect it might work better than you expect.
I also wish that Sony and Microsoft, but let's say Sony in particular, Sony's now got a slew of services that are pay services. And they all got weird names: PlayStation Now, PlayStation Go, PlayStation this, PlayStation that, and View, and, you know, whatever. It'd be cool if there was a big catch-all, give me everything, single price.
Well, that single price would be very expensive. I'm not sure which services there are. They don't have, they sell music and TV shows and films. I don't know what PlayStation Go is.
I may have made that one up.
There's PlayStation View that I know. It's basically TV,
there's View,
but it's only
there's
in the
View,
US.
There's Plus. So View Plus.
Oh, View PSN. Plus Now. Right.
Yeah,
View
yeah,
Plus
yeah.
And Now.
Yeah. And then you got PSN, just the basic one that lets you play online. That's just the core one you pay for.
Yeah, which is so basically just, Plus. So
yeah. It's just like having, like, I don't know. It's just it's getting to be a few too many, in my opinion. I just think you consolidate some of that, and maybe people would buy it more if it was like, for 80, you get the whole package per month or something. Like,
80 per month? Jeez, wow. Okay.
I might do that. You're
a little bit more wealthy than I thought you were.
No, like, I'm
80
probably doing
a month to play old PlayStation 2 games. Scott, I am shocked.
No, I'm saying, like, if you give me PlayStation View, which is currently like $39.99 a month or whatever it is, you give me Plus, you give me the other thing, whatever it is.
Now.
See, this is the other problem, is all these names. You give me all that stuff for some small, or whatever the total is just slightly less than you'd pay for them separately. Just make my life less chaotic. Fair enough. Yeah, that's all.
But anyway, so PlayStation 2 games now added to PlayStation Now. If it's your thing, then it probably is even more your thing now. Oculus Go has been announced and basically released. It's getting really good really good reviews and pretty good VR. So I'm sure that everyone knows in the audience, it's the autonomous VR headset from Facebook, well, from Oculus. You don't need a phone. You don't need to connect it to a PC or a console. It just works as a standalone VR headset. It's getting pretty good reviews, as I said. We're not going to get into all of the technical aspects of it, but just curious, Scott, what do you think that does for games? Do VR games get a boost from this headset, or does it not do much for gaming?
This could be, and I know some people hate this term, this could be an iPhone moment for this technology. And by that, I mean a device that so fundamentally changes how we do a thing that from then on, it just sparks innovation after innovation after innovation. And I think this could be it. A tethered to a PC thing is great. There's fidelity there, but it's also a giant pain in the ass every time you turn the thing on. The idea of popping it on your head and going is extremely exciting. The price is right. $199 for the core unit. If you want double the memory, you pay another $50. I have, to the point that this was complete impulse for me, I picked one up. Business expense, but, you know, whatever. It'll be here tomorrow. That's nice, right? Don't have to wait. Here it comes. Going to be here tomorrow. Now, whether or not this stuff holds up, whether or not some of the limitations on this hardware are so glaring to me that I'll be like, oh, okay, you know, until this gets better, I can't buy in. But I do feel like there's a chance here for this to be that little founding moment of, oh, okay. One day we went from trios and freaking Blackberries, but then there were touch screens, and then there was the whole thing changed. The whole game changed. This could be that. It's potential. I don't know. I mean, untethering alone may not be enough. Not having to use your phone in there may not be enough. I don't know. But I just have this feeling, Patrick, and I feel like this is something big. And it may not be Oculus in the long run that ends up benefiting most from this, but I feel like this is an important point.
I mean, that is what I've been saying for a while, and I stand by it. I think it is absolutely good enough to potentially change the way we view VR, and I've been looking for ways to get it as well. I think we can order it in Europe, and I'm looking for the best way, but I will try to get it. But for games, I'm not sure it's going to be the device that really brings games into VR. I think it might be the same kind of deal as phones are, which some people are in love with some of the games, but most of the hardcore gamers just look at it as, oh, there's also this, and it's fun enough, but it's not the thing that convinces me to spend all my time in it. But I'm just not sure it's going to be the VR gaming just needs a little bit more time in the oven, as you to repeat the expression you used earlier, and I'm not sure this is exactly what's going to be changing it immediately. So we'll see, but I think it's not designed for that. It's designed for different kinds of VR experiences. Games will be available as well, and I'm sure some of them are going to be fun, but it's a more rounded VR experience than a gaming VR experience.
Yeah, and I think that's actually what I'm kind of looking for. And when it comes to games, I'm perfectly fine with lower. I don't need, like, you know, realistic skin and polygonal environments and stuff to have a meaningful presence in a VR world. I'm okay with some of the, you know, more low poly kind of experiences. In fact, some of my more favorite ones on the Vive are that. The ones where they go more stylized and they don't have to spend too much on, you know, trying to make it feel like I'm in a real forest. Like, that's not the point. You can create sort of presence in worlds that can be abstract or whatever. So I actually am excited about that just generally, because I think that designers are getting more comfortable with that, not trying to push the technical envelope. But secondly, I do want a device where I can lay back in my bed and watch Netflix without taking that thing off and not cranking my neck to look at a tablet or a phone or a TV or whatever. Right? There's a couple of use cases that I'm actually really excited about, and that's one of them. So, I mean, part of it is the price is so stupid low compared to any other option outside of Gear VR, but that requires a phone. And that's, you know, you got to count that cost in there. So, you know, that's where this is rubber meets the road for me. It may not be the perfect thing. It may not push gaming much further. Like, there's a lot of questions about all of that. But it's good VR at a price that's finally super affordable. So,
agreed.
Yeah, I'm in.
Let's skip over the financial results really quickly. I'll just mention that basically everyone's doing super well. Nintendo saw a 500% increase year over year on their profit, on their operating profit, which is not too surprising because the Wii U was on its last legs, very short legs, last year. And obviously the Switch has been the explosive success that we know about and love. So that is a great news for Nintendo, but not very surprising. Sony continues to do incredibly well, specifically thanks to its PlayStation division. So the PlayStation is really strong, and that is not surprising at all. Microsoft is also doing pretty well, even though they are lagging behind Sony significantly this generation. They're doing well, and they're selling more. Year over year, they're selling more Xbox consoles, and they're doing okay in that division as well. So basically, all's good in the gaming industry, basically, for the manufacturers at least. It's interesting to note all of this in the generation that has come after the spelling of doom for consoles, because many tech journalists thought, oh, well, smartphones are everything now, so gaming consoles are dead. Well, guess what? They really, really aren't. And that's good news for gamers.
They're not even close. Like, it's a...
Oh, it's the best generation. Well, maybe not the best generation, but close to the best generation we've ever seen, at least in
We are definitely having kind of a renaissance period, or maybe the golden age or something. I don't know what to call it. And you know, no one really knows what to call this stuff until it's over. So who knows until we hit either a dip or another great height. But it does feel like a great time to be a gamer in lots of ways. I mean, the games we talked about today alone, God of War alone.
It feels
alone.
Like a great time to be a gaming console manufacturer. That's what it feels like.
Yeah, which is, and that maybe is a little surprising because, you know, gloom and doom to consoles for so long. Oh, they're going to get replaced by small set-top boxes. Or, you know, there's always some reason why that stuff was going away and it should count as lucky stars that it still exists or whatever. And yet here we are, and the companies have been competitive, and you know, there's a lot of reasons to buy one versus the other or both. And not to mention the Switch being this really strong contender. It's just an awesome, great time for that stuff. Plus indies, the way indies can make games now, like I honestly, there's been a better time for gaming. I don't believe you. I'd kick you in the teeth and say you're a liar.
That's a bit harsh, but I think I agree with the sentiment. Right. Well, and to round up the show, we do have to talk about E3 just a little bit. E3 is coming up in about a month, a little bit over a month. It is the big gaming conference of the year. Everyone is announcing their big things at E3. It's the basically the Burning Man festival for gamers. It's the fiesta for everyone, and it's the moment that everyone is waiting for. I don't know if the Burning Man analogy is works, but I'm going with it. And I think we're going to be talking about this a lot more in the coming weeks and in June. But the one thing that we can say already is that we are seeing an incredible amount of Battle Royale mode games that are being announced and developed. And we knew it was going to come. PlayerUnknown's Battleground, which was released last year, was such a huge success. And Fortnite, which pivoted to Battle Royale mode, was such a huge success after PUBG, and it still is now a huge success. It kind of is almost eclipsing PlayerUnknown's Battleground. But so we knew it was going to come. But that much, I think we're still in the middle of it, but I think it might be unprecedented in the way that a genre is taking over the industry, because we're seeing basically everyone has a Battle Royale mode in their game. Call of Duty, those are rumors, but still, you have Call of Duty, you have Battlefield, you have actually Red Dead Redemption is rumored to have a Battle Royale mode, and that's just the big ones. Everyone else is also doing it. So create a lot of questions about, can a Battle Royale mode live as just a mode? And if it's not the main game, what does that do to the mode? Is it too few people? It's just a lot of questions. But I think, I'm not sure I've seen a genre take over the industry so quickly as this one.
No, the closest analog I can think of is recently anyway, would be MOBAs, and they're coming.
But that took
a
few years.
Yeah, how long did that take? It took...
Well, I mean, League of Legends came out in like 2008, 2009, and it really became popular in 2012, 2013. It took a long while.
You're right. It wasn't quite as immediate as this other stuff. I totally agree with that. Also, if I had to compare it to something else, it might be, you know, the Doom era of shooters and how that pretty much changed the landscape, and shooters became a thing that would never go away. But as far as something that kind of came out of nowhere, was a mod here and there, but no big deal, and then just completely enveloped the industry in a way that is like seismic, I can't think of anything. Especially the part that's crazy about this story, and there's going to be a book or something about this one day, I swear. But Fortnite, the game that was announced forever ago, and when then was delayed, now we don't know sure what it is. Okay, we've changed our mind on what it is. Okay, now it's delayed again. Like, this game that nobody was caring about at all is on nobody's radar. And then they convert the thing in a month to be, you know, to hop onto this, to this, this trend smartly, by the way. And now it's just like this 9,000 trillion pound gorilla out of nowhere. The game that no one cared about, now everyone cares about. It's crazy to me. The only worry about I have about the speed of all this, or the velocity of the growth of that subgenre, is it does, when this happens, has the potential to burn out just as quickly, and I'm a little worried about that. We may be able to iterate on it enough to really keep it interesting, keep it fresh, whatever, but I worry that 4 years from now we're having a conversation where we're going to be lamenting Battle Royale and its rise and fall. I don't know. It's just, again, you know, I get these, Patrick, just little feelings. That's all.
I think there's a possibility. I mean, the rise has been so quick, it could burn out, and as you said, relatively quickly. But I also think that the Battle Royale, 100 enter, one leaves, has such a potential for different variations and tweaks and finding the one little thing that will make it different enough that it's going to be fun. I think in my Pixels show, we talked about this and compared it to racing games. And when everyone was making a racing game, you had the space for slight differences that would make one game that would create its fans. You had the Gran Turismo, and you had the Wipeout, and you had the Burnout, and the Need for Speed, and all of them were different types of racing games, and they all were fun in their own right. I'm just seeing now, breaking news, beep, 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 from a few hours ago. Battle. You remember Battle Right, that MOBA that didn't quite work out, that is not working out as well as maybe some people had hoped. Apparently, Battle Right is getting a Battle Royale mode. So, you know, Battle Royale, it's just 20 players, but still, and it's from a MOBA perspective. So that's an interesting tweak. So we'll see. We'll see how it works out. But I think there is a possibility it will burn out, definitely. There's also a possibility that it will create, you know, I have a tendency of going to it and thinking, well, PUBG, Fortnite, they're already ginormous. There's no space for anyone else. And I think that might be a little bit of a jerk reaction that is a little bit unfounded. Maybe there is space for other, maybe smaller, maybe they won't be as successful, but definitely viable for their developers type of Battle Royale mode. So,
yeah, we'll it'll see. Be. I mean, that's really what I'm anxious about. These basic ones are great and all, and it'll be on Fortnite to continue its relevance and build the game out so that people want to keep playing it. But what I'm more excited about is just to see everybody else's take on it, because what we really haven't seen yet is, what do the people over at DICE do? Like, they've got an engine that could do this. Like, what's their plan? And we already have some rumors as to that plan. But are they going to do something? And will it be, do some different things? Could the Star Wars game that's been so up and down in its popularity and controversy and everything, could they introduce a mode that would revitalize that franchise, the Battlefront franchise? Like, there's a lot that could be done, and I still say Blizzard could do 100 Junkrats enter, one Junkrat leaves. That's it. That's your game.
I think it could work. I think it would work as a little brawl. It would be funny.
Yeah, put it in the arcade, make it a permanent thing, see how popular it gets. If it goes crazy, you cancel all your other modes and you just focus on your 100-man game.
There you go. All right. Well, on that note, we're going to end the show. Thank you so much, Scott, for being with me once again. It is always a pleasure. Would you tell the fine folks listening where they can find your work on the internet?
Sure. There's a lot going on right now. In fact, if people are, you like video games and you're thinking, man, sometimes I just like to sit in and pull out a deck of playing cards and just play poker or go fish or something with my friends. Well, good news, everybody. We're about halfway through it now, but there's a Kickstarter going right now for just that. Custom poker cards, chips, alternate decks, all with artwork by me and other guest artists. And it's a goal I've had since I was a little kid to make one of these, and I'm finally doing it. So if you are interested in such things, head on over to frogpants.com/cards, and you can learn all about it. For everything else, you can find me and my ramblings on Twitter @ScottJohnson.
And for me, it's Not Patrick on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, everywhere. And you can also find my shows at FrenchSpin.com, one of which is Pixels. It's easy to find on your podcast app as well, actually. You can just type Pixels, find it, and subscribe. And it's a general gaming show, and we do it every couple of weeks, and you might enjoy it. So go check that out. And if you don't, we will talk to you again in about a month for the next episode. I don't know if we're going to do it before or right after E3. It might be fun to do predictions and then results or something like that. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But we'll be back in about a month, as I said. Thanks so much for listening, and have an excellent DTNS rest of the month. Bye.
Bye. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. From a local business to a global corporation.
Partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.